Kia ora, good morning to Koro Vakauta, who is our Pacific correspondent this morning.
Kia ora, Catherine.
Yes, beautiful Cook Islands. Northern Marianas, however, crippled by economic consequences of coronavirus, what are we calling it now, COVID-19,
yeah.
Prevention, it's really hitting their economy hard.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, you know, it's obviously a tragedy in a lot of parts of the world. We heard this morning with the, I think it's just over or under 250 dying just in a day in the Chinese province. But in terms of the CNMI, I'll just clarify, there are no cases of this virus at the moment there. They have sent a patient or a sample of a suspected case over to Atlanta, Georgia, to the Center for Disease Control to get some confirmation of a suspected case. But other than that, there are no confirmed cases. But what is the impact of this virus is the CNMI, it's in Micronesia, so a further kind of further north than many of the Pacific Islands that we know. It's close to Asia. So their tourist market, which normally gets around about 400,000 visitors a year, just under half of those visitors normally come from China. So what's happened with this coronavirus threat, there are four different airlines that have basically suspended flights into Saipan. That's the main airport of the CNMI, of the Northern Marianas. And so basically, there's no Chinese tourists there. Well, that's 50% of their market gone. The Visitors Authority expect that to be the case up until mid-year. No flights to, you know, be resumed until mid-year. And they're citing losses of nearly $50 million by October, which is huge for an island nation. Hotels are struggling at the moment. They're sitting at around 20% occupancy rate. So they really are struggling economically. Yeah, as I mentioned, they were already had their tourism market was already had a bit of a fall because of the Hong Kong protests. There was a typhoon in 2018, so there were some residual effects from that. So it's just adding to what's really been not a good period of time for the tourism market in the CNMI, which they're heavily reliant on. You know, they're diving and the beautiful beaches that are in the CNMI. So it's not a great time for them.
Really hard times. Pacific LGBTQ activists converging on the New Zealand Pride Festival. And what's the message that they are bringing with them? What are the issues that they are raising?
Yeah, well, I guess the rainbow movement in the Pacific isn't new, but this specific year we know that the Pride Festival in Auckland is happening the whole month of February. But last weekend there was the Rainbow Pride Parade of around about 7,000 people, and it was entitled Our March. Kind of citing, and the theme was inclusiveness. But Pacific communities, so Pacific LGBTQ communities had kind of converged on Auckland just to send a message about the inequality and the inequity that they'd been suffering in their countries and their communities, basically when it comes to legislation. You know, New Zealand has been quite progressive, as we know, in this area. But there are communities in the Pacific, for example, consensual sex, this is consensual sex, I'll just underline that again, between men is a criminal act in the Cook Islands, Kiribati, PNG, Samoa, Tonga, Tuvalu, and for both men and women in Solomon Islands. And that in itself is kind of strange too, that there's kind of separate categories there. But anyway, and the Labour MP, Louisa Walls, being involved in this as well, kind of being just that kind of voice for this movement. And she's mentioned that there are these laws are kind of what she cites as colonial laws established to break down and disempower Indigenous cultures. That's what she sees the problem as. So there's this group that came and they led that march last Saturday, just saying, come on, it's time for our communities to be recognised in legislation.
Is the situation improving for the rainbow community across the Pacific, or in some cases getting tougher?
Well, this is the thing. I think as people, dare I say, become more enlightened and educated, that there is like a youth movement to kind of see a bit more recognition in legislation anyway for these communities. But as recently as late last year, the Cook Islands decided not to repeal the law banning sex between men, and that's punishable by 5 to 14 years in prison. Also, the Fiji Prime Minister, who we all know, Frankenbainimarama, he mentioned last year that as long as his party was in power, there would be no such thing as same-sex marriage in Fiji. And he's got a bit of history there. I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, he said, you know, if people, it kind of made world headlines, if people wanted to get married, if women wanted to get married, they should go to Iceland. He said they should go to Iceland to get married. It's legal there. take off to Iceland, we don't want you. So he's got a history about that. And then, of course, even in Tonga, in recent years, there's been opposition to a convention against the elimination of discrimination against women. Big convention. You'd think, oh, that sounds good. Don't want to discriminate against women. But part of the fear of that was that women, A, would get access to abortions because you just give them all rights, they could do what they want, and B, they could marry another woman. So that kind of curtailed that convention being ratified. So there is a lot of work to be done, but it's also sensitive with cultural issues as well, and I think that's the thing that you have to peel away. There are so many different layers and facets to this.
Also, a boat tragedy in Bougainville. A vessel's been drifting for weeks.
Well, this is it's tragic and it's amazing at the same time. It's basically four people from Bougainville are now recovering in a Solomon Islands hospital. They were adrift, as you mentioned, for nearly 4 weeks. They set out from Buka on the 22nd of December. They were going to the Cataract Islands to celebrate Christmas. That's a journey of about 113 kilometres. So people are like, wow, just a canoe there went across. But that you got to remember, in these kind of remote islands, that's how people travel. There aren't inter-island ferries. There are not flights. So it's just in a kind of rudimentary canoe. But this capsized, and out of the up to eight people, four passed away or four died and four are surviving. But the amazing thing is that these people, four survived. They set out, as I mentioned, the 22nd of December. But the boat was found 2,000 kilometres away near New Caledonia. So just to give people a feel, I think that's longer than the length of New Zealand. So this boat was found drifting many kilometres away from where they were meant to be, currents and et cetera. And they survived. They'd survived by rainwater, floating coconuts that had been tossed about by the sea. It's quite amazing.
It's a movie, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they stayed, most important thing, they stayed with the vessel, and the vessel stayed intact?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it just capsized, but they managed to hold on to it. And the sad thing is that one survivor did talk to local media, and he said that there was a baby on board. The baby's parents had died in the initial kind of incident, but he'd tried to hold on to the baby, but eventually had to let it go. So, yeah, it is tragic, but also an amazing survival story for those that have survived.
For the four who are now in hospital, as you said, recuperating.
Yes, they are.
Hey, thank you very much. Koro Waka Uta is RNZ Pacific's news editor and our Pacific correspondent. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Malo.